Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis. You can either follow us in the Gemara or not follow us. I think that either way you'll be okay. Daf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. We begin with the Mishnah. Now, just to give a general overview of what we're going to be doing these next couple of days. The Gemara begins, the theme of the Gemara over the next few days at least, is first of all outlining what happens on the Yom HaDin, on Rosh Hashanah. The next stage is how Hashem connects us to it. And then the stage after that is what we do about it. So three stages. What's going on? Hashem letting us in on what's going on. And as a result, what do we do? So we're going to begin with the first stage. So let's see the Mishnah. Barba prokim ha'olam nidon. The world is judged at four times. It's already a surprise. But let's see. B'Pesach ala tvua. On Pesach, the world is judged as far as grain goes. How much grain is there going to be throughout the year? Ba'atzeres al peles ha'ilon. Shavuos is when the fruit of the tree are judged. B'Rosh Hashanah, kol bo'i oilam oivrim lefanav kibnei morim. On Rosh Hashanah, every individual in the world is brought before Hashem. They pass like those of Moroim. What are those of Moroim? We'll wait, we'll see that later, closer to Rosh Hashanah. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, the idea being, well, the main point is that it is a very individual process. It's not like the grain where there's this universal decision. On Rosh Hashanah, each person stands individually before Hashem for his own personal individual judgment. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, Hayotzer Yachad Libam Hamevin El Kol Maaseh. He created their hearts as one, meaning even though every person is a completely different story, He created them all. And He's the one who has the insight as to all their deeds. This Pasuk and the example that the Mishnah is giving of appearing to Hashem like B'nai Marayim is a bit cryptic. We'll wait to see the Gemara address it. But that's judgment number three. On Rosh Hashanah, man is judged. Obechag nidoinim alamayim. On Sukkot is when judgment is passed for water. Okay. So again, Pesach, grain. Shavuos, fruit. On Rosh Hashanah, man is judged. And on Sukkot is when the judgment is passed for water. So how all these four come together, we're going to slowly develop the ideas. But first of all, before we even move on, we were just introduced to the concept of a judgment day. Let's begin developing this whole business. So first of all, the Ran asks two fundamental questions. What is the source for all these judgment days? And why are these dates the judgment days? So the source for the judgment days we're going to put off. It's going to become relevant later in our discussion. Why these dates? So, as far as the other three judgment days go, fruit, grain, water, it's easy enough. Pesach time is when the grain starts sprouting. Shavuos time is when the fruits start blossoming. Approximately, that's when they really start growing. And Sukkot time is the beginning of the rain season. That's easy enough. But why is man judged on Rosh Hashanah? And here we get into a very fundamental discussion in understanding what's actually going on in the Yom HaDin. We're going to use the Ran as our baseboard. He says two fundamental ideas. There's a lot going on in Tishrei. But before we even begin with the Ran, we have to understand a certain premise that comes before the Ran, and that is as follows. Time is actually a creation. Meaning we understand that the most inherent element of existence is time. You can imagine the universe losing anything except time. Time goes on even if there's nothing, right? Well, not exactly. Where before the world was created, there was no time. It's something that the human mind can't fathom. I think that Einstein actually did discuss this idea. So apparently it could be fathomed by a genius human mind. But whatever it is, before the world was created, time didn't exist either. The upper worlds, where Hashem is, it's above time. What does that mean? Don't ask me, I have no idea. I live under the rule of time. But man was meant to function in the material world. Material world. A material man can only function based on time, and therefore time was created. In other words, in a way we might say, time is a platform for us to operate on. Just like space, right? Earth was created as a platform for us to operate on. Time was a platform created for us to operate on. But now, we have to understand something. How much time was created? Oh, thousands and thousands of years, ultimately millions of years. No. 1 year. That's how much time was created. That's why just that year is recycled. Year is recycled again and again. That's why, for example, what is the Hebrew word for the word year? What's the Hebrew word for the word year? Shana. What's shana? Repetition. The world, the year is recycled again and again. Now the truth is that once you really get into the deeper levels of this, there's a million dimensions to this. The day is really just one creation that's recycled. The year is one creation that's recycled. The week is one creation that's recycled. The 7 year Shemitah is one creation that's recycled. The Yoiva. But one thing at a time. Right now we're focused on the year. The year, in the year it's most manifest, Shana, repetition. And therefore we have to understand. For example, when great things happened in the past, because of the spiritual special time, it's not that we're commemorating these things that happened in the past, but they are actually happening now, just on the spiritual level. This idea is discussed at very great length when it comes to Pesach. The redemption that happened then, it's not being commemorated now. It's not that since it's the same date, there are special spiritual properties to the time. But what happened then is actually happening again now, just on a spiritual level. It's your job to connect to it. This is true for all the Yomim Tovim, etc. This is the premise for us to understand what we're about to discuss regarding Rosh Hashanah. Now we go back. Why Rosh Hashanah? Yeah, we understand Sukkot is the appropriate time to discuss water. But why is Rosh Hashanah the appropriate time to discuss man? So what is the... What's that? Oh, so you'll say Adam HaRishon. You're right. But that's going to be the second part of our discussion. The Ran gives two answers. The second is yours. What happened at this time, which actually creates a spiritual property of the time, and here I'm talking about in a broad way, not Rosh Hashanah per se, but what we call the Yomim Noiraim, was actually the time at which the Jewish people received their second lease on life, or their relationship with Hashem. The Jewish people had sinned in the ego, and as far as Hashem was concerned, at least the way he expressed it at that point was, finished, right? You're going to sever the relationship. I created something that was meant to be eternal. So severing that. But Moshe Rabbeinu worked very hard, and Hashem said, you know what? I'm willing to give it another go. I'm willing to give it another go. And Moshe Rabbeinu was called back up. We're going to try to do this again. When was he called back up? Rosh Chodesh Elul. The process continued until Yom Kippur. And on Yom Kippur, the Jews came down. The forgiveness was complete. And we are now back on our plane on a new relationship with Hashem. This is what's happening again every year. And therefore, it's Davka at this time that Hashem says, you know what? I want this time to be the judgment day every year. Why? And this is a thing that we're going to be seeing all throughout. How Hashem is busy manipulating things in our favor. Don't think of judgment as Hashem sitting there harshly saying, alright, let's see if you can prove yourself. Hashem, kiveyachol, is doing everything he can, and this is an expression of Hashem's love for us, is doing everything he can to make it work for us. He's sending it up in the most favorable times, and he is equipping us with everything we need in order to make it work. Just, we have to do that bare minimum and take his cues. So therefore Hashem says, you know what I'm going to judge man? I'm going to judge man at the time of year when forgiveness and reconciliation is going on. Because again, as we already discussed, it's not that it happened in the past. This reality of reconciliation with Hashem is built into that entity that we call a year. And it's happening again every year. And therefore Hashem says, you know what? This is the time that I want to judge you. I want to judge you at the time when you are in the best possible situation of making things up with me, etc. And therefore, yes, these are the Yom HaRoim as they were established. Now why particularly Rosh Hashanah? This explains the whole period of Elul through Yom Kippur. Which, by the way, also makes us understand, it's a little bit ambiguous, where does Elul as an entity come in, right? Everyone makes a very big deal out of Elul, but is it just kind of technical? It's a month before Rosh Hashanah, so use that as the time? No. Elul is a very inherent part of this package. Because this process of Hashem telling the Jewish people, come, I'm ready to give it another chance. Chazal tell us that's why we blow the shofar from Rosh Chodesh El. Because when Moshe went up that last time, the Jewish people were now on edge. They said, last time Moshe Rabbeinu went up, the first time he went up, we messed up badly. Now, everybody be on the alert. We're going to show Hashem. Right? Hashem is telling us this what to talk about. So at that time, from that Rosh Chodesh El, they blew a shofar. Everybody be on the alert. Can you imagine what that El looked like? We're going to show Hashem that we're deserving of this second chance. That's what that Elul looked like at that time. And that's what every Elul through Yom Kippur is meant to look like every year. Shana. Shana as in repetition. It's a repetition of what was then. And therefore, once again, Hashem in His love for us set the judgment day at this time. Now, where does Rosh Hashanah come in? This is a little bit vague. We know that it finishes with Yom Kippur, but where does Rosh Hashanah come in? The Ran leaves this a little bit ambiguous. He doesn't have a very clear answer to this. He says, yeah, we see that the process is Elul through Yom Kippur. But where did we come to pinpoint Rosh Hashanah as the actual day of judgment? We're going to leave this with a question mark right now. As we move ahead in our discussion, we'll see that the Ramban provides the answer to this in a very, very profound way. But we're not up to that yet. Okay. So that's understanding number one. This is what we call the element of Luchos Shniyos. That's what's going on in the Yom Neroim. This is inherently a time of reconciliation with Hashem. It's inherently a time of closeness. That's one explanation of the Ran. Actually, it's explanation number two. I presented it first because it works better for me. But now we'll get back to explanation number one, which Rav George already mentioned before. And here we come on to something very deep. Very profound in understanding what we're headed for on this great day that's coming up next Thursday.
I just don't understand how Rosh Hashanah fits in as a Yom HaDin within the realm of this 40 days, because it's like not like exactly the middle, but it's within the middle of that first of Elul where Moshe Rabbeinu went up and Yom Kippur.
Right, we're leaving that ambiguous right now. Why Rosh Hashanah? How did Rosh Hashanah? How is that pinpointed from when this 40-day span? How is Rosh Hashanah pinpointed? I'm leaving that ambiguous right now. We're going to leave it with a question mark. We'll see.
We'll get some clarification.
In Yirtzeh Hashem, we will as we go along. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Now let's move on to the Ran's. We're going to move back to the Ran's first explanation, and he says as follows: there was a different reconciliation that happened on Rosh Hashanah, and what was that? Adam Harishon. When was he created? Aleph Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah. When did he sin? Aleph Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah. It took an hour. 2 hours. He was created. He was warned an hour later. He sinned an hour after that. It took 2 hours from the time of his creation. And he did tshuva, and he was reconciled with Hashem all on Rosh Hashanah, and therefore, once again, reconciliation is built into the day of Rosh Hashanah. Okay. But now here, I want to actually take this a step further. Once again, based on the understanding that what happened in the past is actually repeating itself every year, it's not just reconciliation that's being repeated every year, but it's the actual creation. On Rosh Hashanah, all of existence ends and the world is being recreated. Existence is beginning again. And this, by the way, we're going to see a little bit later as we move on. The main theme of the day on Rosh Hashanah is crowning Hashem as King. We're going to get to that. We're not even holding there yet, because that's already our role. We're way before that, right? We're talking about what are the actual workings of Rosh Hashanah. But just in order to get to our point, what's the idea of crowning Hashem as king? Who was king yesterday? What does it mean that Hashem gets crowned as king every year? So based on our introductions, we should already have some understanding of that. The reason Hashem is becoming crowned as king is because there was no yesterday. Everything is beginning now. When everything is beginning now, obviously Hashem is being crowned as king. It's all beginning now. Therefore, yes, Hashem is taking his place as the king of the world now. And therefore, yes, Hashem is creating a new world now. It's obvious that this is the day of judgment. What's the day of judgment? Hashem is setting up his world. Every person's place in this world is now going to be determined. And therefore, Rosh Hashanah is the day of judgment, just in the simple sense of, we're all being created on Rosh Hashanah. You're being created on Rosh Hashanah, obviously, your role, you're going to be playing in Hashem's world, your place in Hashem's world is also being determined on Rosh Hashanah.
We have a lot of availus in the 3 weeks, because the hair is committed at that time, especially in Tisha B'Av.
If Jonathan is asking, why is there not some element of misfortune, of trouble on Rosh Hashanah because of the terrible avera that happened? Of Koranos. Tzara. Why isn't there tzara on Rosh Hashanah because of the avera? So first of all, we have to understand. And once again, once there's reconciliation, when it's done right, you can't term it this way. I won't term it the way I was about to term it. But we'll say this. The tshuva becomes the outstanding highlight of the day. Put it this way. A person does tshuva, he's in a greater place if he does tshuva right. The ultimate tshuva brings a person to a greater place than he was in before the other. The 3 weeks is not about tshuva. The 3 weeks is about the actual destruction and oinish that Hashem brought at that time. Another Marishan was a different story. It's about reconciliation. Now, your obvious question will be, wasn't there a punishment then too? I don't want to get into that now, but suffice it to say, not exactly. Okay? There was consequence, but there was not punishment. That's a tough discussion. We're not going to get into that now. But, yeah. But, I will say though, that there is the Yom HaDin on Rosh Hashanah. We're not going away from that. Rosh Hashanah is a Yom HaDin. Yet at the same time, it's characterized by reconciliation and closeness. Okay. So now, the world is being created, and therefore we're all being created. We have to ask for a place in Hashem's world. A place in Hashem's world, a role in Hashem's world means all the events of the year. All of your events are part of your role, your mission, your function in Hashem's world. And therefore, yes, that's all being laid out on Rosh Hashanah. But here, I want to take this to a little bit of a deeper level. When we say that the world is actually being created on Rosh Hashanah, the Maharal says this is very literal. The term Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year. It's not just that now a new year was plunked down, and Rosh Hashanah is the first day, and that's the day when everything is. Hashem is predicting what's going to happen over the year. Maharal, putting it into my own words, Maharal uses very cryptic and esoteric wording here. And this is a theme that we see in many of the Kadmoyim. Rosh Hashanah contains the entire year. Rosh Hashanah is that initial cell. How does a body develop? Right? It's got that first cell with the DNA in it, from which a whole lifetime and a whole body unravels. This is what's going on Rosh Hashanah. It's the head. Everything then develops from, unravels from the Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, the entire year is actually being placed into that, packed into that Rosh Hashanah. Just, it unravels, it then unfolds over the course of the year. But Rosh Hashanah is actually that original molecule from which it all develops and unfolds. Rosh Hashanah is the original point from which it all unfolds. Rosh Hashanah actually contains the entire year in it. This is brought out in a couple of ways. But therefore, I'll just bring home one point. Therefore, for example, that's why on Rosh Hashanah we take so many measures to ensure that we're always doing the right thing, and those 48 hours have to be maximized with the ultimate performance. Why? Because imagine if you step into an operating room. Operating rooms are obviously sterile, right? But let's say it's an orthopedic surgery. Someone's leg is being operated on. Well, you can cause a lot of harm by touching the wrong thing, but it's a leg. But if you step into an operating room where there's brain surgery going on, the brain is open, right? And inside there are all different nerves. You press that one and the guy is blinded for life, right? And you touch that one, the guy is paralyzed for life. Here, you won't kill him, but you'll knock his right arm out of commission. Like, everything is exposed. Everything is on the table. And now let's take it a step further. Let's say you're dealing not with the brain, but with that original cell. If you were able to touch it. That's why Hashem doesn't make it exposed. Right? That cell is very, very well protected for as long as it's that vulnerable. It takes 9 months until it's already hardy enough and it developed enough that it can already emerge out into the world. But imagine if originally you were told, you know what? Here's that little original cell, 2,500th of an inch. That contains the person's entire body, entire lifetime, all the DNA, the blueprint for the next 150 years. Right? You give a little smudge. Okay, now let's say you don't kill the kid. But you gave a little smudge. The next 150 years are going to be smudged. Right? His arms are going to develop smudged, and his legs, and everything else about him is going to develop with a fingerprint on it. Because you're just touching something that now that actually captures the whole person. Therefore, you have to realize, Rosh Hashanah, you are in that room with the open surgery going on. With the open brain surgery going on. I have to be very, very careful what you touch. And therefore, for example, there are all kinds of halachas that reflect this point. For example, right? We eat sweet things because we want to have a sweet year. What's the idea? The idea is that, yes, if Rosh Hashanah was a sweet day, obviously these things have to be developed and qualified, but right now in a very brief way. If Rosh Hashanah was a sweet day, Rosh Hashanah encapsulates the entire year, there's a better chance of the year unraveling that way. And therefore, for example, the Poskim say, the Mishnah Berurah brings this down. This is not ideas, this is halacha. Mishnah Berurah says, right, we're not supposed to eat bitter things on Rosh Hashanah because you are injecting bitterness into that stem cell of the entire year. Right? Now the Mishnah Berurah says, if you're not supposed to eat bitter things because they represent bitterness, you better be all the more careful not to lose your temper on Rosh Hashanah. Right? You better be careful to be in a good spirit, a pleasant demeanor. You lose your temper on Rosh Hashanah, how's that going to affect the year? Another halacha, don't sleep on Rosh Hashanah. Again, not getting into the halachic particulars, lamais at the end of the day, there's room to be lenient to sleep after chatzos, but let's say before chatzos, don't sleep on Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, many, many people will be makpid to get up before daybreak on Rosh Hashanah. You don't want to be sleeping at all on Rosh Hashanah. Why? Because once again, Hashem allowed you access into that operating room. Whatever you touch, everything you do is going to be affecting how that year is going to unravel. So therefore, you know, don't sleep. The way the place can put it is, you don't want to have a sleepy year, do you? So this is Rosh Hashanah. It's the day when the year is not just being created, but the day when the entire year is being created in one day, and it's going to unravel after that. And now here we come to the Ramban says something very deep here, which I'm going to say without understanding, because the truth is that a lot of connecting to the Amin Arayim is about connecting to things that we understand are beyond us. We are mamish entering the highest of spheres here. So Ramban says something, and this will answer the question that was raised earlier. How do you get to Rosh Hashanah as the starting point? The Ramban says, then we have the Aseret Yemei Tshuva leading up to Yom Kippur. Right? What is the Aseret Yemei Tshuva? The Aseret Yemei Tshuva leading up to Yom Kippur is actually the year beginning to unravel. If again, we'll talk in terms of the stem cell, right? Which then unravels, right? It starts splitting and developing, other cells start stemming out from that. in Kabbalistic terms, again, we'll talk about this with time understanding it, this is the right time for that. The building block of everything, spiritual and material, are the 10 spheres. Right? You look in the Siddur after by Sfira Sa'imer, Chesed Shebegvur, Gvur Shebechesed, Tiferes, Netzach, all that, right? There are the 10 spheres. These are the building blocks of everything spiritual, everything physical, etc. These are the spiritual atoms of the world. It starts, again, with the stem cell, which then develops into a proper molecule of 10 spheres. So it starts with Rosh Hashanah, which then unfolds through the 10 spheres, through Yom Kippur. There you have your first molecule, we'll call it that, the first fully developed cell, which started really out just as that stem cell. And there, the year has now unraveled, and now it can really fully develop. That answers our question from before. We know that the Slicha was completed on Yom Kippur. You work backward. 10 spheres back brings you to Rosh Hashanah. But okay. That I really just added. That's not our main point right now. Okay, so here we have another profound understanding of what the Yom HaDin of Rosh Hashanah is about. It's actually the day of creation, the day of recreation. And we're being created anew, and how we're being created is what's at stake. Our year is our role in Hashem's world. Okay, now. Now, before we move on, we didn't even begin the Gemara. Okay, no guarantee of pace here. Before we move on, there's just one very, very important piece to add to this picture, and this is a point that both the Ramban and the Maharal make. Did it ever strike you as funny that on the one hand this is called the Yom HaDin, Midas HaDin, while on the other hand these days are defined as days of love, closeness, mercy? Yom HaDin in our minds has a certain negative connotation, doesn't it? See, we have to understand something very fundamental. The truth is that the two are part and parcel. And here we have to differentiate, and this is the point that Jonathan kind of touched on before, between what we call Pur'anus and Din. Din does not mean punishment. Pur'anus, Onesh, these things mean punishment. Din does not mean punishment. Din means absolute justice. Or in other words, absolute truth. Okay? Now here, we have to bring out a very profound point. Falsehood, lack of truth, can only exist the further you are away from Hashem. The closer Hashem is to something, there simply is no room for anything that isn't absolute truth to exist. An example is a pasuk in Tehillim that says, "Yedeya Hashem derech tzadikim v'derech reshaim tovim." In Hashem's reality, kibiyachol, there is only one way of life, the righteous way of life. Anyone who's living on a non-righteous way of life, anyone who's sinning, it's really just an illusion. There is no such reality. Just, in this world, Hashem kiviyachol withdraws, makes room for a reality outside of Him. But it's really not real. As soon as Hashem comes and shines His face kiviyachol, reveals Himself in His full glory, these things just dissipate. There's no real existence to them. The only real existence is existence that is recognized by Hashem. Saying it's not recognized by Hashem really doesn't exist. Just that in this world, there's a certain mirage, which exists for a very temporary amount of time. That's why, for example, what do we say in the Rosh Hashanah? Dimayon. That's why, for example, what do we say in the Rosh Hashanah davening? Kalarisha kula ke'ashon tichle. All of wickedness will simply dissipate like smoke. And it looks real. It isn't there at all. As soon as Hashem really appears on the scene, there's just no room for it. Okay? This is really what Din is. As long as Hashem, so to speak, like Kiviyachol, let's say Kiviyachol a million times, as long as Hashem is Kiviyachol, maintaining a distance, so there's room for hanky-panky. There's room for all kinds of other things to be going on. But as soon as Hashem is really focused in a close way, Rechuk, but as soon as Hashem is focused in a close way, all that can exist is all that ought to exist. Anything that Hashem recognizes. And therefore, what automatically happens is that if you're deserving, as soon as Hashem really zooms in, if you're deserving, you're going to be in a great state automatically. If you are undeserving, you're going to automatically start sliding toward destruction. Just as long as Hashem is further, the wicked can prosper. Hashem zooms in, Hashem really gets close, the wicked dissipate. Dissipation can be a process. But whatever it is, the truth implements automatically. This is what Yom HaDin is. Yom HaDin is, for the rest of the year, Hashem, so to speak, observes from a distance. Obviously, this is all relative, and this is all metaphorical, but Hashem observes from a distance. On Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you know what happens? Hashem gets so close to Olam Hazeh. Hashem comes so close that automatically what ought to be, boom, is stamped down. And that's what we call the Yom HaDin. That's what we call the Yom. This is Midas HaDin at work. Midas HaDin means justice. And it's actually a manifestation of Hashem getting very, very, very close. Too close for comfort if you're not in the right place. Right? This is what Yom HaDin is. So now, this is really the beauty of it. This is why, on the one hand, Hashem gets so close, it can reach a situation where the charge is just too great. If we're not perfect, we fall apart. And that's why, as we'll see, Rishoyim Nechtamim L'Misa. This automatically means that the wicked are written off for dead. Obvious question is, there are plenty of Rishoyim that are still around. We'll get to that. But ultimately, what happens on Rosh Hashanah is that the wicked are catapulted in the direction of destruction, just because that's the automatic result of Hashem getting so close. And the righteous are automatically catapulted to an ecstatic place. Right? Just, that might take time, and it might develop in different ways. We'll get there. Okay? This is what the Yom HaDin is. Now this is scary. Yom HaDin is, that's why it's called the Yomim Noiraim, the days of awe. This is very, very scary. Right? When Hashem is getting so close. And the truth is, if we all think about it, we're talking about absolute truth, we all have our excuses, our rationalizations. Come on, if you would know that in 1 second, it's going to be absolutely clear, all of your different follies, etc., it's terrifying. And it's a good idea for us to connect to this terrified feeling in a healthy way. Yeah, in a healthy way, as we'll develop as we go along. Whatever it is, the beauty of it is that Hashem gives us the opportunity to say, what's going on is din. These are Yemei Din. But you can use it as a means of getting closer to me than you'll ever be able to get. Normally, in normal circumstances, a person like me, Hashem is drawing so close, it's too much to handle. It's like Har Sinai, right? That the whole world trembles. That's what we say about Rosh Hashanah. We don't see it, but earth can't handle what's going on, right? And all of us would naturally, like the Jews at Har Sinai, just fall back and swoon. But Hashem says, wait, before you swoon, I'm going to show you how, yes, that terribly fearsome approach you can utilize to draw so close to me, because I am so close, and connect in a positive way. Hashem gives us the means. We'll see soon how we do that. The Ramban says, I'll just give already a little bit of a hint as to how this works. The Ramban says that Truah, what is Truah? Truah actually is implementation of Midas HaDin. That's what the Shefer is doing. Implementation of Midas HaDin. Why would we do that? He shows different examples. Right? The Jews blew a Truah outside Yerichai. And what happened? That invoked Midas HaDin and Yerichai fell apart. That's what Truah is. The Jews blow a Truah, their enemies disperse. The Jews, by blowing Truah, they're invoking the Midas HaDin. Why would you want to invoke Midas HaDin? When you invoke Midas HaDin, what you're doing in this way, right, in a positive way, you can invoke Midas HaDin in negative ways. But when you're invoking Midas HaDin in a positive way, what you're actually doing is you're telling Hashem, I know you're approaching, and I want to draw myself close to you also. I am anticipating that approach. Or in other words, the way it's said in the Kadmonim, in Slichus, in Chayelecha Evrach, the approach is frightening. It's something that we can't handle. Where do you run to escape? You know where you run to escape? You run toward Hashem. That's how you escape the fearsomeness of Hashem's approach. You run toward Hashem, and Hashem is telling you, I'm inviting you to do this, and I'm going to show you how to do this. And therefore, Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin, but it's a time that you can connect to Hashem more closely and more intensely than at any other time throughout the year. Okay, we finished learning the Mishnah. Now we're ready to start the Gemara. Bezos Hashem. That's going to be Thursday. But just to sum up, what is the Yom HaDin? How does it come to be the Yom HaDin? Two basic ways. Because built into this part of the year is A, the Jewish people's reconciliation with Hashem, and B, the actual creation of the world, which came along with reconciliation and closeness. These are inherent in these days, and therefore these days automatically manifest as the Yom HaDin. Okay, look through the Gemara. I believe that we'll be moving a little bit quicker now that we've laid down our fundamentals. Okay.